The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
I've been talking to people this week. Some have expressed the maybe a sense of overwhelm with just how challenging things are in the world right now. I think the shootings over the weekend really deeply affected many of us. And the questions are, you know, the questions are how can our practice help us meet this? And I think that our practice does have something to say here. If the practice doesn't have something to say about the really big things in our lives, it's not a full practice. It's not a complete practice. And so a lot of the times we explore and meet and talk about kind of the inner things that are happening, and it kind of can feel a little bit separate or apart from the bigger things in the world. And yet there's not, in the way that I understand what the Buddha taught, there's not that much of a difference. It's more of a difference of scale, in a way, whether there's something happening internally or externally. The external things that happen are manifestations. A lot of the times are manifestations of patterns going on in our minds, patterns that we're sharing with each other, patterns that have been conditioned into us, patterns that that whole cultures have picked up. And so, the looking inward, internally, we can learn something about those patterns and then potentially begin to meet and explore these bigger issues as well. The piece that occurred to me to kind of bring in around the shootings over the weekend is the, you know, that this speaks, what one of the things this speaks to me in terms of what the Buddha taught is this teaching of the truth of unreliability, that the world is unreliable, that people are unreliable, that we cannot count on our world going the way we'd like it to go. And this is a truth, and actually in talking with one particular person earlier this week, I asked them, you know, when you're feeling this overwhelm, what helps you? What is it that you know helps to create some balance in the mind again? And this person said, when I remind myself it's like this, when I remind myself that this is what's happening, that can help to create a kind of the mind having a little more space. And that's an interesting thing to recognize. It's not intuitive necessarily. But with our meditative approach, with our interest in being with our experience, not resisting, in the guided meditation, I encouraged you to check in with, how are you right now? To not push anything away, but to just open to what is here, what is actually true in this moment. That has a way in which we are befriending our experience, we're befriending ourselves, and that has a transformative power that is, it's hard to understand at times how or why simply befriending our experience, if it's something challenging or difficult, how or why that would be transformative. But part of the reason why it is transformative is that when we are opening to just how things are in this moment, and in this case, just looking internally, and then we'll see if we can expand it to looking externally in a moment. Looking internally, just how am I right now? If we explore being curious about that, being friendly with ourselves about that, having a sense of, can I be with this? Can I be okay with how I am, even if it's something challenging? Can I be okay with this experience of frustration or impatience or confusion or even a feeling of overwhelm? Can I hold that? Can I be okay with that? Then the mind is not caught in that pattern. It's not reinforcing that frustration or that confusion or that overwhelm with a kind of a pattern of thought and reinforcing, oh, this is a problem, I need to figure out how to do something about this, and we're just all caught up in our thoughts and our minds, we're spinning. That sometimes we can find a way to some kind of a path of action with that kind of spinning. But we're also, we're tending to reinforce that very spinning by being caught in it. And so this exploration of what does it mean to just know that this spinning is happening, or what does it mean to know that this frustration or this confusion or this overwhelm is happening? It's a different relationship to that state of mind. And so rather than kind of spiraling into it, it's like we're holding it in a bigger container. It may continue to spin for a while, but another analogy perhaps is that it's like we're, when we're spinning with something, when we're engaged in the frustration or confusion and we're kind of spinning with that, trying to figure our way with it, with our thoughts and our beliefs and our views around that frustration. It's like the gears are engaged with that. Like the frustration and our thoughts are feeding each other, and they're just keeping each other going. And so it's like we've got our foot on the gas pedal and the gears are engaged, and it spins faster and faster at times. And so what this being with that state of mind does, it's kind of like we put those gears into neutral. So they may keep spinning for a while, but they're no longer reinforcing each other. They're no longer fueling themselves. And so that pattern of whatever difficult state it is, has a chance to kind of unwind. And so this being with experience is like allowing our minds to go into that neutral place so that a pattern can begin to unwind. And so looking at the bigger picture, if we think about, well, what does it mean to be with something as big as the shootings over the weekend? To acknowledge, to recognize, yes, this is what is here. This is the truth of this time. You know, recognizing truth, I mean, sometimes we think about truth, the word truth may create resonances or overtones of goodness or something, and this seems like, well, this shouldn't be truth because this event was so horrible. So many people died, so much suffering. And yet it is true that it happened. And so what does it mean to open our hearts to that truth? And how might that be helpful? So this um, this truth of what happened over the weekend, as I said a moment ago, to me it kind of resonates with what the Buddha said, the truth of dukkha. Dukkha. The Pali word dukkha, which means, is often translated as suffering, but is also understood to mean something broader, just like the unreliable nature of experience of life. That is a broader truth, that there's nothing in our experience that is reliable as a place where we can say, yes, that is the thing that's going to make me happy forever. That is the way things are going to come together such that everything's going to be okay from now on. I'm going to be completely fine with the conditions. You know, if I can create these conditions, I'm going to be completely fine. There's no set of conditions that can be created that are reliable. Because conditions coming together, there's sets of things that bring conditions together, and the fact that things come together means that they can fall apart. There's an inherent impermanent nature to everything that happens, and an unreliable nature because of impermanence. There is this unreliability. There's nothing that's going to be reliable as a place where we can land. And the relationship that we often have to this unreliability, it's interesting to reflect on, because we sometimes think in our own smaller worlds, you know, I should be able to make things the way I'd like them to be. I should be able to do this. I mean, why am I not able to get the job that I want or have the relationship that I want or whatever it is that feels like it's not quite satisfying for our lives? You know, we feel like we should be able to do that and that there's something wrong with us if we can't. Or we feel like there's something wrong with the world. Somebody, either the world, like the world is to blame, or somebody else must be at fault if it's not going the way I'd like it to go. It's very interesting. Instead of recognizing this is a truth, this unreliable nature, this is truth, we fight that and we try to, it's kind of like building sandcastles. We keep trying to build something that's going to endlessly keep falling apart, thinking that we'll find our happiness when we get that sandcastle built. And yet, you know, so this kind of exploration around unreliability and recognizing that this is truth. It is true that things are unreliable. You know, that we have one relationship to this unreliability is that we feel like it shouldn't be unreliable, that something's wrong if it's not reliable. But if we begin to open to it on the other side, and we begin to look at, well, things are unreliable, then we sometimes fall into despair and hopelessness. And so, is there something in the middle? Is there something in the middle that's possible for us? So opening our hearts to this unreliability, there is a way to take in that this is true, this truth of unreliability. It's true, and yet not fall into despair or hopelessness. To bring in a little bit of lightness here, I found a, oh, do I have it with me? Oh, I do. I found a cartoon that kind of speaks to this rebelling against unreliability, rebelling against the way life is. This is a Pearls Before Swine cartoon. And for those of you who are unfamiliar with this comic, it's a bunch of little creatures, and they have relationships and do things together. And there's a mouse and a pig in this one. So the mouse is at his desk, or her desk. The mouse is at their desk, writing, "Dear life, I am writing to express my dissatisfaction. First, I didn't ask to be here. You put me here. That started us off on a bad foot. Given that rocky start, I think you'd strive to be a good host. But no, you fill this place with unpleasant surprises. And as if that is not enough, at some point I apparently cease to exist in some manner that is most likely shocking, painful, and tragic. Can you say rip off? Please provide a refund." And Pig walks up, and Pig is watching him, watching this letter be written, and the mouse says to Pig, "Where does one send one of these?" So this expresses, I mean, this is truth. I mean, it's funny because it's true that this is the nature of life. We don't ask to be born. We die in some way. We don't know when it will happen. And all kinds of surprising and unexpected things happen along the way, some of which are very unpleasant, some of which are lovely and pleasant, but we don't necessarily have control over all of this. And so this is truth. The Buddha, in his journey, was interested in, his whole journey was kind of around, is it possible to find freedom from suffering? Is it possible to, for human beings? He looked around the world and saw that beings are struggling in human, I mean, just this kind of thing, you know, there's aging, there's sickness, there's death, and there's a way in which we struggle with that. And it's this struggle. You know, the Buddha was interested in understanding, is it possible to be free from suffering? And it seems to me that in his journey, he began to tease apart the difference between what is truth and what is struggling with truth. And so much of what is actually hard for us is the struggle with truth, is the denial of this is the way it is. And so when this person that I was talking to earlier this week said that they found there to be a little bit of kind of space when they recognized, oh yeah, this is true. It's like this. This is what's happening. And that they felt a little bit of space. That's that kind of coming into alignment with, yes, this is what is true. It is unreliable out there. We cannot count on people to do what we'd like them to do. We can't count on the conditions of the world creating all beings being kind and compassionate. The conditions that came together for the people who were the murderers, the shooters over the weekend. You know, they didn't just start that in their own minds. There were many conditions that came together to create them as well. There's vast webs of conditioning at play in our world, and there's an unreliability in terms of how all of this plays out. So in one of the big pieces that I want to kind of point to, so the Buddha kind of teasing apart this unreliable nature of experience. That unreliability itself does not have to create struggle. Now, that may sound like a contradiction at times. You know, how could these mass shootings over the weekend not create struggle in the mind? And what would it look like for it not to create struggle? I mean, we might have some idea about what that might mean. You know, if it means I'm not struggling, it means I don't care, maybe, is what we would think. If I'm not struggling, it means that, yeah, everything's great. But that is clearly not what is happening. It's not great. I mean, this truth of unreliability is not about, yes, everything is wonderful. I mean, the truth of unreliability doesn't mean that this truth is, yes, everything is sweetness and light. These are hard truths to connect with. And so the exploration around what does it mean to not struggle with that truth of unreliability and yet not simply say, oh yeah, doesn't matter. Both of those are kind of, they're both not wise responses to that truth of unreliability. So opening our heart to the truth of unreliability means not closing down to push it away, taking it in, this is what's here. That means not sinking into it. So sometimes if we don't close down, sometimes we might feel like we just get overwhelmed by it, sunk into it. And so that's not it either, being pulled into the undertow of the overwhelm of it, of the despair of it. It doesn't mean giving up to hopelessness. What it can mean is that the heart can open, when touching into this truth of unreliability and a particular situation like this one over the weekend, opening our hearts to that this is true, not closing our hearts around it, not pushing it away, not sinking into it. When we can have our hearts open with it, there's a way that the heart kind of resonates and vibrates in sympathy with the pain of that truth. Resonates in sympathy with the pain of those who have lost their lives, with the confusion of the mind that could do such a thing. And the heart in being open to this truth, my feeling of it when I can touch into this kind of thing, it's like the heart is like a bowl of Jell-O, and like the challenging situation is like this big wave of vibration rippling through it. You know, it's like a big blast of some kind of sound wave or something. And if it were a hard thing, that sound wave might shatter that hardness. But with the Jell-O, it ripples and vibrates. It doesn't just stay still. It's not that it just goes through without any resonance to it. But the heart kind of ripples with the struggle, with the pain of the situation. But it doesn't get shattered by it. It doesn't get broken by it. And so there's a way that when we can have an open heart with this kind of challenging situation, that that open heart can be with the pain. And what's available there is compassion, kindness, And that compassion, so this is where the, you know, I said that sometimes we have this idea of like, well, if I'm not struggling, then I wouldn't care. But this heart that is kind of more jello-like with this tragedy, with tragedy like this, is not, it's not struggling. It's not resisting the feelings and the reality of it. But it is also not just sitting there saying, oh yeah, everything's cool, no problem. It's with that resonance, the heart wants to do something. It wants to act in some way. And this would be different for every person, how that action might express itself. With an open heart, an open-hearted response to tragedy, to suffering, it might express itself in very different ways. But the movement of the open heart is not one of just, oh yeah, no problem. But it is one that sees the suffering in the world and wants to do something, wants to act. And so that open heart that can meet that truth of unreliability is an active heart. It's not just saying it's hopeless. It's not just saying whatever. It's not caring. In fact, my experience when my heart has that jello-like quality, it feels like it cares more because it's feeling that suffering. It's feeling it, but it's not fighting it. And so this is, again, this is that way that when we can kind of expand our container a little bit and, oh, this is actually the truth. This is what's happening. That creates a little bit more of the space to maybe let the heart resonate and vibrate in sympathy with what's going on rather than fighting it or resisting it. It is what has happened. Fighting it, resisting it, trying to figure out how I could, I used to do this with small things in my life. It's kind of like, you know, something happened to me or something, you know, that I didn't like or whatever. And then I would spend a lot of time trying to go back and figure out how not to have had that happen. How could I have not had that happen? And it's like, it did happen. So, you know, it's like there is some value to reviewing the conditions. There's some value to reflecting on, you know, what has come into that so that we can learn from it. But the you know, kind of going back and saying, well, if I had only done that or that or that, you know, then this would be different and I wouldn't be feeling this way right now. That's not so useful. But the exploration around, well, what is this happening right now? And what is a compassionate response to this that's here now? That's the way to step forward. That's the way also to begin to learn to have a different relationship. Let's see. So this meeting this truth of unreliability in its so many different expressions. I mean, we meet this truth all the time. It's happening constantly, and we can kind of ignore it or avoid it some of the time, you know, kind of like just pretend it's not there when it's the smaller things of life. When something like this happens, it kind of just stares us in the face. It's like, yeah, this is like, wow. Our mind kind of reels with the, how can it be like this? And yet it is like this. So the the Buddha encourages us to remember this truth it is staring us in the face all the time, and it is, as I spoke about with, when the heart can come into alignment with these difficult truths, there's some kind of a different kind of experience. It's more like well-being. And again, that might sound a little odd. Again, I said earlier, how can I not struggle? What is it? If I'm not struggling with that challenge or that tragedy, then it means I don't care. We might also have the sense or the feeling that if I have a feeling of well-being, and maybe that's not quite the right word. I think maybe more it's like if the heart feels unconstricted. If the heart can feel unconstricted around tragedy, that's a form of well-being. The mind can navigate it with some wisdom. When we are constricted around tragedy, we are kind of pulling in our old habits and patterns around anger and fear and contempt and all kinds of challenging and difficult states of mind that is kind of our habit of what we do when something is hard. And yet if we can open to, okay, this is this truth, can I not resist this? Can I have some measure of sense of not being constricted around it? There's some wisdom that can be available there that can lead to different responses. The unconstricted heart doesn't tend to respond from fear and contempt and anger and confusion. The unconstricted heart, it's like when the heart is not constricted, there's access to compassion and love and equanimity and even joy at times. And these qualities are active qualities. They support us making decisions and choices that are resonant with joy and love and compassion. They support us taking actions that are resonant with joy and love and compassion. And so meeting this truth of unreliability does not actually have to be, an opening to it as true, does not actually have to be something that feels depressing. We start to see the constrictedness around the truth is really where the struggle is. When we're constricted, when we're denying the truth, when we're fighting the truth or falling into the struggle around it, that struggle is where our own suffering is, that struggle, that fighting with that truth is a large part of why we suffer. And this is in the small and in the large. We fight, we struggle against this truth of unreliability in minor ways. In ways like just like going through our day, we get frustrated and angry and confused, often because something has happened that was unreliable or that we felt like we couldn't be in control of, and we feel like we're at fault about it. Just in small ways, we go through these gyrations. And when we can recognize, oh, this is the truth, rather than fighting it, maybe the wisdom of the heart that allows that truth to be true rather than fighting that truth, maybe that heart of wisdom can bring in another way of responding, a compassionate response, a kind response. So cultivating this ability to meet our own struggle with that truth. This is one way to find our way through to that open heart. We actually have to be willing to be with our closed heart. Take a little bit bigger step. Okay, the heart feels closed about this. Maybe that's what's happening for you. The heart feels like it can't be open around this situation. Well, maybe the heart can be open around that closed heart. That's a first step. Can I allow that truth of the constricted heart, not to sink into it and wallow in it, but to know this is how this being is right now, this way, with fear, with confusion. Can that be held in a slightly bigger container? Can the heart hold that as being, that is the truth of this moment? This will slowly begin to allow the heart to hold deep, bigger and bigger forms of this truth. And it may happen, I've seen this in my own practice, at times when I'm holding something like that, it's like, yeah, wow, there's, and just in a small way right now, something small, like a pain in the knee or something, and there's a constriction in the mind. It's like, it doesn't like the pain in the knee. It's like, if I'm fighting the pain in the knee and kind of feeling like that aversion, that frustration, that resistance to the pain is a problem, then that's a kind of an aversion to that resistance. And when I can open up and go, okay, well, what's happening right now? Wow, there's a pain in the knee and I don't like it. Oh, that's what's happening right now. That's the truth. Whew, there's something that seems to relax when I can land with that. Oh, that's what's happening. And sometimes we have to step a little bit wider and a little bit wider. Okay, yep, there's that thing that's happening and I don't like it. And there's fear. Okay, well, can I know that? Well, and there's anger. Okay, and can I know that? Can I be okay with just this being as it is in this moment? That's kind of the first way in to opening to these truths, opening to this truth of unreliable. Our own experience is unreliable. We cannot say of our minds, you know, seeing, for instance, oh yeah, there's this pain in the knee and I don't like it. Wow, I see that not liking is not helpful, so why don't I just stop not liking it? Good luck. You know, our minds are not that reliable that we can control them in this way. But there does seem to be some capacity to open a little bit and say, okay, well, that's what's happening. That's what's true. There's the pain and I don't like it. That's what's true right now. And when we come into alignment with what's true in our experience, there's a way that the heart relaxes. And that same kind of relaxation happens as we come into alignment with, yes, this is the truth of this tragedy. It is true that this happened. It doesn't mean that it's good that it happened. It doesn't mean that it was right that it happened. It's not about that. It's about acknowledging this is what happened and having the heart that can be open enough to that to then find its way to step forward, not with its habits of resisting the truth, but instead of that, with this way of, okay, this is the truth. What does it mean to live with knowing this is the truth? And this is a journey for all of us to find our way with this. It has very different ways through. So I want to leave some time for questions. I kind of feel like I did a very broad brush kind of thing, but if, you know, what's in the room, what kind of comments or questions or reflections do you have about this? Yeah, and we can use the mic.
Yeah, thank you for talking about this. I've been feeling really overwhelmed, actually, so this was just right on. For me, I think the image that came up a lot when you were speaking was of Kuan Yin, and just kind of how, like in my own practice, like when things come up, like this week's been really overwhelming, and especially with the shootings and kind of the sentiment politically, right, and et cetera, et cetera. So kind of just that having that earth, like kind of that green earth quality of like groundedness and feeling, you know, a part of it, is that?
Well, and Kuan Yin too, you know, Kuan Yin's job description is meeting the cries of the world. You know, that is exactly what this opening to this is about. And so that image, I think, it's a good one. You know, that Kuan Yin is the we could call the goddess of compassion. You know, that's the movement of heart that doesn't turn away from anything and is able to meet it. And the very meeting of it can be so transformative. And we, that's a place of trust. You know, that's hard for us to trust, that just meeting the suffering will somehow transform it. But it does. And so that, but you had some more, I think, you wanted to share.
No, that was, yeah, just kind of that earthly quality of having that groundedness, but also having that openness as well, right? Because she's really like, the other hand is like, okay, I'm ready to, because I'm not just going to sit back. But for me, I think the image that's really powerful is because in my own life, I've noticed in my own practice, like, I tend to, like, get into it. I used to tend to just kind of dissolve, you know, kind of take it on, and I get overwhelmed, and I'd be like, oh, my God, I can't take so much. But now it's like, have that strength, right? That earthly strength, because that is what's going to make it so that I'm kind of responding from, like, awareness of awareness rather than the ego, because the ego is, like, shrunk a little, and there's, like, way more space. So then I'm able to reach out, but I'm, like, very confident that I'm still very strong. And I think for me, that's been really important, because without that strength, and you can, I mean, I could have all the goodness in the world, but
you know, the strength is interesting, too, you know, because it's like we think about, again, it's one of these paradoxes. We think of strength as being connected with a me or an I, but there's a strength that's connected with letting go that's very powerful, very grounded, as you say. There's a strength there that heart of jello is also very strong. You know, it's not going to be shattered, but it resonates and vibrates, and so it's got a strength to it, but it's a paradoxical kind of strength. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Anyone else have any thoughts to share?
I just wanted to say thank you to you for saying that and bringing that up. I made a connection with something that I've been feeling also in relation to giving somebody else that needs a boost some energy. Because if you're doing that for everybody, I mean, at least in my own experience, feeling like doing that for a lot of people, or if there's one person that really needs a lot but isn't capable of filling their own cup, you know, wanting to pour and pour and pour and pour, but only having so much oneself. So a big learning for me has been, how can I let go? And what you said, it was light bulb went off, because just saying there's so much strength in actually saying, you know, this is, I'm going to just let it be beyond me.
Yes.
And that's what I've been feeling almost. And I had during a meditation, tapping into feeling just everything in the whole universe behind me and also in front of me. But just like, if I were to explain it as a physical feeling, like if I were to fall back, like just then completely let go, that I would not go anywhere, because it's there and it's already like completely pushing up. So that's what I've been tapping into, is that image and that feeling of, even if I lean back as hard as I can, I'm not going to move because it's behind. And that is where I've been saying, you know, maybe I do, I care about this person, so I do give them some of my energy, but also I am filled because this is filling me all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I've been focused on. And thank you both so much for helping me connect that.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. Did you have something?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, so yeah. I'm just trying to, get some specifics on, how should we behave like the Jello. And yeah, because... So it's definitely not being overwhelmed by whatever the suffering is, and but then does that mean I just don't think about it and leave it on fire?
There's a lot there. I'll speak to some of this.
Yeah.
I mean, this is really the whole of our practice. Mm-hmm. How we find our way to that Jello heart. And, so there's different ways in. And sometimes it does take, I mean, it's kind of like what we need to have is some kind of measure of wisdom to know when is it that we can hold something and say, oh, yeah, it is like this. This is the truth of this moment. Yes, I can be with this and feel that sense of settling and landing with, oh yeah, this is the truth. And when we don't have that capacity, because sometimes the power of whatever the conditions are is so strong that it just kind of pulls us under. It's just too overwhelming. And so we need to know when we have the capacity to meet it, to be with it, and when we don't. And so there are times, and plenty of times in my own practice, where it's like I would see, oh yeah, wow, I'm just getting pulled right into that anger. Let me do something else. Let me, you know, not repress it, but also not give it any attention. And so that's a tool that's really helpful to learn. It's kind of one of the early things to learn in terms of dealing with these really big things, these really overwhelming things, is to learn something that helps you to ground, something that helps you to not have to be magnetized, like pulled to that situation. Because sometimes when those overwhelming things, they are like magnets. It's like, you know, it's almost like we try not to look at it, but it's just, we're right back there. And so we need to learn, and I find it's helpful to kind of have some go-to kind of thing or tool to help. And for me, often it was my feet on the ground while walking. You know, it's like I could turn to that without pushing away the experience. I'd like say, okay, yeah, you can take a walk with me. Okay, we're going to take a walk, but I'm going to put my attention on my feet. But yeah, you can take a walk with me. You know, so it wasn't like trying to repress that feeling, but it was putting my attention in something that was kind of changing, that kept going. It's like next step, next step, next step. That was an easy thing for me to kind of just let myself not be pulled into that thing. And, you know, if you do something like that for, you know, even, you know, 2 minutes, it really helps to demagnetize that thing. You can do it in a room with sight, you know, looking at one particular thing for just a second and then picking something else to look at for just a second and then another thing for just a second, just kind of stringing along. It's like every time you might feel that little pull, you just pick something else and pick something else. So not staying, you know, not saying, oh, I'm not going to pay attention to that. I'm going to pay attention to that and try to zone in on that one thing, because the magnet's going to be too strong and it'll pull you back. You need to keep kind of shifting. So there's some things like that that are useful to just help you not be overwhelmed, pulled into the overwhelm. And then as you see that there is some capacity to meet what is happening. It's like that kind of, that thing I said earlier about, okay, well, what's happening? Well, there's this kind of huge situation. the shooting, and here are these huge kind of turmoil feelings, and can I know this? It's like, oh, okay, yes, this is what's happening. There's turmoil inside connected with this tragedy outside, and it's like this. If the mind can hold it even in that way, I mean, sometimes I think we might make the mistake learning something about mindfulness of like, oh yeah, mindfulness means really like paying detailed attention to something, like with the breath, like, okay, I know the in-breath, I know all the sensations of the in-breath and the out-breath. That is not the kind of attention that's usually available in this kind of a situation. It's much more, wow, it's confusing and messy and it's chaotic, and that's what I know. Can I know that? Yep, okay, and that's the truth of this moment, is chaos. Yep, it's not a specific experience. It's much more like, you know, like you're in a swirling mist of, you know, fog, and you can't see where you're going. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like if you're trying to see through the fog to see 10 feet ahead of you, you're not going to be able to do it. But you can know that you're in a fog and know that it might be a good idea to stand still. Okay, yeah, this is what's happening, this swirl of experience. So it's not like you like in a fog, you know, you don't like look at detail and know, well, that's that piece of fog and that's that piece of fog. You just know that it's a big mess of fog, and that's what you know about it. And so similarly with these bigger kind of relationships to experiences that can be overwhelming, learning a way to meet this kind of broad experience. It's like not trying to land and say, yes, this, you know, that's that body sensation, but just like, wow, it's a big mess. That's what's happening. And I can know that. If you can do that and have a sense of being able to hold that mm-hmm. for even a little while, there's something that happens there. It's like the disengaging of the gears. We're no longer trying to, like, you know, wave the fog away. You know, it's not going to work anyway. You know, it's like we're just knowing this is where we are. And like in the fog analogy, you know, the wisdom in the fog. If you're driving in the fog and it's that dense, you know, you need to stop. You know, you need to not keep driving. And so similarly, in this kind of a situation, some wisdom is, wow, maybe just knowing that this chaos in the mind is what's happening is all that is what needs to happen right now. And then as you're with that, then there may be little kind of inklings of what could happen next or what would the next thing be as you're able to hold that. And so it's a slow process to begin to meet these kinds of situations. But if you can meet it, then play with that and play with this kind of bigger view rather than trying to be mindful of something specific, exploring, oh, well, what is it? Can I just know it's like really messy right now? That's enough.
Mm-hmm. Using the analogy of this driving, you know, in the fog, so you did that, okay, so like I realize I'm in the fog and then I just pull over and then like take a rest there regardless of basically that means distract myself like from this foggy situation. And then
so I didn't quite understand. Yeah. So you're in the fog. You pull over, and then you said you take a rest.
Or? Yeah, you take a rest. Or you take a nap, or like you just start yeah. reading something. So meaning you just distract yourself from that situation.
Well, sometimes that's okay. I mean, you know, it's like there's times when we, and this is again something to learn. It's like if you can know, yes, okay, wow, it's foggy. It's a big mess. This is not the time to like be trying to decide something. It's like at a certain point, then the mind will naturally kind of shift to something else. And you don't have to try to stay with mm-hmm. that kind of messiness. Mm-hmm. It can be that like once you've acknowledged it to that level and created a little bit of space around it, then something, it's kind of like the mind finds its way out of that foggy mess into something else that it can do. And so you don't have to try to kind of stay with it. You know, so you can play with like being with it for a little while, but you don't have to force yourself to stay with it.
By stay with, you mean stay with the fog, or
stay with the fog? Yeah, yeah. You don't have to stay. You don't have to force yourself to stay with the fog. But it's kind of just like acknowledging, yeah, this is the situation. You know, in this scenario related to this thing, the mind is confused and clouded and can't make the next step. And so, knowing that, not resisting that, not fighting that, at some point the mind will kind of like set it aside and do something else. So that's fine. You don't have to when you pull off on the side, you don't have to like keep going, is it foggy? I mean, at some point the fog will clear and you'll know the fog is cleared and you can go forward. So, you know, it doesn't have to be distracting yourself. You know, it might be, but it doesn't have to be. It can simply be that the mind realizes, yeah, it's foggy here. Let's find something else. Yeah. And it's time to stop. So thank you for your attention.